nervous?
No.
Where's your answer?
Dennis Beckham, that's the ball on! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham!
Oh, no! Oh, yes! He missed it!
Welcome to the Suffering from Joy podcast, and we have a rare occurrence. We had the eclipse recently, and now we've seen something that hasn't happened since last summer. We've all been waiting. It seems like it's been forever, but it really hasn't, and we're all really excited that the NHL playoffs are back. Additionally, we got a thirst trap photo where everybody hadn't done it in so long that they looked really confused about why they were there and what they were doing. But of course, really what we're all excited about is Austin FC with another Copa Tejas fantastic victory, 1-0 at the Houston Dynamo. Joining me today, Brad Tillery, who's rooting for the Avalanche in the NHL playoffs. Brad, how you doing?
Abs start today, so very excited for the playoffs to get rolling, and still shocked as hell that that Austin FC somehow came out with a victory last night.
Yeah, nice win for the Canes, who were sort of my like B team yesterday to open the playoffs. Charles Peacock of the False Nine Texas, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling really good. You know, winning always feels good. Winning on the road is better. Winning against a rival is even better than that. And onward to another Copa Tejas.
Yeah. We're going to hopefully get into the permutations a little bit later in the show about that. But any big NHL playoff thoughts?
No, I kind of gave up on that one. I'm sorry. I kind of gave up on the NHL when the Nordiques left.
Okay. So you got a little rivalry going with Brad here.
Sure.
hey, what are your opinions on the Yotes leaving?
It's better than playing at Arizona State. it is, but I think one of the things that's kind of interesting about that is I don't see Salt Lake City getting an NHL team and an MLB team, and so it kind of takes them out of the running to get the A's.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, as someone who's a Golden Knights fan, like, suddenly you get to a point going from the Golden Knights come in, then you go to, like, oh, the Raiders are coming in, now maybe the A's are coming in, the NBA's coming in, Don Garber's interested. I don't know. It just sort of flows.
All right. Seth, how are you feeling about the game now that we got the NHL side of everything covered?
Well, the other NHL take is the Leafs lost last night, and that's always a good thing. So that means that there's
fucking
a
course they did. It's the first round. It's what they do.
Hey, that means we only need 15 more losses to eliminate Canada from winning a Stanley Cup once again.
Doing the Lord's work every year.
Yes. No, like last night was a like sit back and pray. We only had to clench for Stuver what like 7 times last night. So like that was a victory in and of itself.
Yeah, I thought it was weird too that towards the end of the game they were kind of complimenting Stuver on the broadcast and they were like, "Well, Houston just keeps shooting it straight at him." And I was like, "No, he's had 3 or 4 like really really nice saves."
Yes, and he did a really good job of not like one of Stuver's things that he has had some issues with, despite being an outstanding goalkeeper for this team for the past 3.5 years, is that sometimes he allows for easy rebounds, and he did a great job last night of not allowing any Houston rebounds in and effectively helping allow our defense to relatively neutralize Maciache once he returned in the second half.
Yeah. I want to kind of we've done this segment in the past, and I want to bring it back just for this game. I don't know if we're going to keep doing it. Something that's, you know, we'll call it moment of the match, but something that really stood out to you is defining either this game in like good way, bad way. Obviously different than how we do moment of suffering, but I think there are a few obvious choices we can go with here, but Charles, do you have a big moment of the match that, you know, one way or another you thought kind of defined the game?
I mean, the obvious one is the goal. So I'm going to skip that one. It was at the end of the first half when Houston got a really good chance where they essentially overloaded the backside against Gallagher. They actually had like 3 players there just against Gallagher. And that was kind of Stuver's best save, but he was so well positioned that it ended up being kind of easy for him. But that kind of went to show like Houston wasn't able to play the way they normally wanted to play through the middle. And their chances of scoring just required a lot of intricate passes or trying to go through the heart of the defense. And Austin just wasn't able to let them do that. And I think as the game went on, Austin got more confident defensively. to where they knew that they could keep Houston off the scoreboard.
Yeah, that's a good choice. And obviously not getting like a backbreaker goal against you going into halftime always helps. Seth, any moments of the match for you?
I would say the first half, I think it was around like the 22nd, 23rd minute when Brendan Hines got a very big clearance when it looked like Houston was going to have a clear chance to take an early lead. Because we knew if that match had, if Houston had gotten an early goal there, that I don't see a way that this team would have come back, because like, this team just isn't. I mean, yes, we got a road goal last night for the first time in over 400 minutes. But like, this team is not made to come back on the road, and pretty much how we won last night was the only like template I could see us winning games on the road outside of getting a like random penalty here or there, which yeah, I'd actually have to check when last time we got a road penalty is, because I can't think of it right now. But it is, yeah, as we go through it, Heinzeich and Hedges, which I was a little nervous about their pairing before the match, actually came together pretty well. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see that pairing in a voluntary sense at some point moving forward in the next few months, especially with Julio being away for Copa America.
Yeah, I think we had one earlier in the year when Julio was on international duty too. Yeah, that Heinzeich block, I literally had like my forehead almost already in my like the palm of my hand watching it, because I was so certain it was going to the back of the net. And then the broadcast actually cut out too for me. Glitched, and so I didn't get to see it until the replay. I was just like, how did the ball not go in? What was going on? Brad, any moments of the match for you? And you can take the easy one if you want to.
No. Actually, mine was the same as Charles's earlier. I thought the save right at the end of the first half on the overload was massive, because it kept us nil-nil. Like, and as Seth just said, like, if we fall down 1-0, we're out of that game. The way that game was playing out, the way we were playing, I thought that save was indicative of how we played the first half, because I thought the first half was pretty well overall, actually. But it just kept us in, it kept us a little bit of hope, and I thought from that point on we were gonna get out of there with a draw, unless Hector Herrera came in and did something special. So to me, that was kind of the key moment, besides the obvious one of scoring a goal. And Seth, to answer your question, the last road penalty we got was the win, also our last road win prior to this at Minnesota last year, the 4-1 win.
Yeah, that sounds right. I'm glad you've already double checked me there.
Well, yeah. our last two matches at Minnesota, Dreyfus has had a PK. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know that. I thought we were slow like the first 10 minutes, but after that, I was surprised how well we kind of came out of the blocks and dealt with everything. And, you know, we were kind of cracking jokes about it. Nice chance for Rashford here in the FA Cup semifinal, but we're kind of cracking jokes like, oh, this is our highest XG in a road game already. Oh, we're already ahead of our total XG on the road for the year. Ooh. So far, like in the first half, both. I guess I'm ahead of you guys.
Yeah, you're somehow like...
All right. I won't give spoilers. I'll just react when you guys react. But yeah, I thought we grew into it. I'm going to go a little alternative on my moment of the match, because it's Verde Mercury of a great friend of the podcast. We'll just go with Dad. We'll call him with a very Freddie Mercury pose that if you haven't seen yet, you will. They're already selling patches of it. I think it'll be not quite, you know, Pollo and DC iconic, but it'll be an iconic lasting image in club lore.
Okay.
Or at least among the fans.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, we kind of got into the game a little bit already. First half thoughts, really, they were moving the ball pretty well first 10 minutes or so, but oof. And, you know, we just kept coming back, and we actually had shots and we had possession, and we were not just like trying to do the same thing over and over. We were pulling Rubio out into different positions. We were playing the ball back. We were moving Drewski around. We had the wingers coming in. We had the wingers combining with interior players. Like, it didn't look like the same team we've had in a while. Any big thoughts there going forward, just on the first half in general?
I mean, I'm right there with you. I thought it was the absolute most free-flowing we have played on the road in a long time for the first 45 minutes. We were there. Yeah, I think if you watch that St. Louis game and you watch the other two road games we played this year, we kind of just showed up
looking for a draw if we could get one. And last night, it felt like we showed up looking to try to get a win in that first half. Second half's a totally different story. I felt we kind of fell back into some patterns in the second half. But, you know, there were some really nice movements, good shots. I mean, even if everybody's on the ring, he hit it right at the keeper, but it was, at least we put one on net for a change, right? I think my biggest frustration was at times we had opportunities to do a little more. There was a play where Rubio had a ton of space in front of him in the final third, and then he immediately passed the ball out wide. And I know that's probably how the system's designed, but dude, just take the ball forward. Force the defense to come to you. Overall, I thought it was a very positive half of soccer. We also saw early, and y'all had mentioned the play for Hines Eich where he cleared one out. There was another play where both – there was a Houston player going with the ball towards the net, towards our goal in the 18. And it was a little bit of a break. Hedges is trailing Hines Eich. And they both took a route that forced the ball back outside, which is just not something we've seen happen a whole lot, especially when Julio has been in there. So I thought I thought that was an early indicator for me that the decision-making on the back line was much more solid, and we could probably trust it the rest of the game. So I thought there was a ton of encouraging signs early in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, mostly that we came out to, you know, you can kind of play defensive and try to nick a goal, which is what we ended up doing in this game. But a couple of the games that looked like, nope, 0-0 is the max we're going to do. We're not even going to really try to go after them. And I think it's a big contrast. We obviously didn't do a show after the St. Louis game due to some scheduling stuff, but big contrast in how we played in both of those games. Yeah. Do a little terminology quiz. Charles, would you call that a smash and grab?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I would just call it a counterattack when we had some shots.
I feel like it's part of the reason that the smash and grab was because it happened so late. Like, I'm not sure that, like, because it looks so much like two teams who aren't good at attacking, we're going to end in a 0-0 draw, but like just a random goal sparking up does seem like more of a smash and grab immediately leave.
And also,
can I call it a Real Madrid?
No, but like you start looking at that, and like if we pull up the second half stats here, like that was our only shot on goal in the second half. We did not. If we had gotten that goal, like if we had played in the second half like we had in the first half, I would not consider it a smash and grab. But considering how the first 40 minutes of the second half went, absolutely.
Okay, it's a road win. I don't think anybody cares. I was just curious what the panel had to say. I did notice too. Like we can go ahead and talk about it now. Like the second half. Yeah, we definitely shifted into let's sit back and try to not do anything stupid mode for a while. Do we think that was like a halftime instruction, or do you think it was just sort of, you know, reverting to form for some of the guys out on the pitch?
I think it was both. Okay. I actually thought it worked really well and was smart. It forced, especially with the way that it looked when essentially we were playing with a four-man front line, did really well in keeping Houston from being able to progress the ball just sequentially to where they were having to make longer passes through the midfield that gave Danny and Ring and Hines Eich a little more time to be able to cut those balls out. And it really kind of, by bringing the forward line back, they were able to compress Houston's midfield to where they just didn't have space to really try to connect or do anything.
Yeah, and we also did – go ahead.
And I think you also have to remember, we were playing with two center backs. We didn't even have a backup center back on our bench last night. So the fact that we kept the same back four, like yesterday was the first time that Biru had ever played 90 minutes for us. That we didn't make a – I mean, yes, you could argue, obviously, that we made a defensive substitution of taking Danny out for Valencia near the end of the match. But for the most part, we were playing a very – like, we had to do something that we knew that we wouldn't overextend our back line. So we didn't – because we really – I mean, yes, you could have brought on John, but, like – or maybe even Hector for a few minutes. But, like, there weren't that many options back there, especially at center back. So that sort of made that second half strategy make a little more sense.
Yeah, we also, at least for periods, went ahead and decided, actually, this might have just been Biru going rogue to solve my biggest pet peeve with the way we play defensively, which is not just letting anybody who wants to cross the ball in. Yes. We're actually stepping out and challenging some people and not just letting them wing ball after ball after ball in, which is nice.
I thought it was pretty obvious, too. We were sitting back in that mid-block, right? And the moment that Houston would get the ball in the – there was a point, I don't know, 70th minute or so. Houston would get the ball in the roughly final third, final – getting over an hour half of the field. And the moment they got into that area with a pass, they tried to pass in there, we swarmed, especially up the middle. It was an immediate swarm of the ball and actually sprung a couple of counterattacks. If we had any more speed, I actually think the idea to counter like that last night would have been more effective than it even was getting the one that we got when we finally did put a little more youth and legs on the field. But they were, like Charles said, they were damn intent last night to not let Houston play up the middle, which kudos to them and kudos to Josh for setting a team up like that last night.
Yeah, you know, we talk every now and then about, hey, you know, it looks like the game plan might have been good, but you guys didn't plot it out well enough, or you didn't make adjustments, or, you know, things like that. And I think, as you know, the game plan was try to hit on the counter, clog up the middle. Didn't need to adjust, I guess, really. And, you know, came out with a win. We want to talk about the goal now? Now that we've filled 15 minutes of airtime, not talking about the goal yet?
Sure.
Yes. Sure. Okay. Well, I guess, first of all, when you guys saw the lineup, did anybody know CJ was going to be on the bench before the game?
Yes.
So he was on the bus yesterday. It was pretty clear.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that had leaked out and I just missed it or what.
As for the Copa Tejas matches, we they charter some Vaughn lanes and take them down to the other parts of the state. So yeah, when he was in the pregame pictures, it was pretty clear. I mean, again, we had two unused bench spots. Like I think next week, well, if everyone is, yeah, if Leo is back, which he should be, I don't think he'll start, but he'd probably be a bench option available. And Julio's back from suspension. No one else got suspended. I think that'll be the first time that we can run out a true first team 20 man roster all season, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Even so, seeing him on the bench, I was like, oh, well, we're just filling roster spots like when we threw Jimmy on there. So I was a little surprised to see him on the field at all. Happily so. Different option, at least. But
we'll get into that conversation. But I'm not convinced he sees the field if Owen Wolf is healthy.
Oh, I'm pretty convinced he doesn't. But
yeah.
He made a difference yesterday, and like that should matter on a certain point. But we're talking about Josh Wolf here, so I'm not sure. But you know what? He looked better than Ethan Findlay did yesterday, and I'm not just saying that because he won a key header.
No, he was. I thought for overall play, he was our best winger on the field yesterday. For if you take thick and packed and what they did on the field and the time they put in, the shift they put in, I thought he was the best winger we had.
Active with the ball, did a great job tracking back on D.
Yeah.
Tried a couple new things, went after a guy.
I think Findlay was kind of the definition last night of like eating up some MLS minutes. Like he just kind of was there. I mean, going back to the goal, like I was trying to think about the last time like Austin really scored a like route one goal like that. And I was thinking maybe it was like the opening match against St. Louis last season with Driussi, but even then that wasn't a like flicked on header situation. And then I realized that Austin's never really had anybody who could win a header like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think Zardes would be able to. He doesn't. Well, but I mean, you'd also think.
Yeah, like there's a lot of stuff like in theory this should be the way it works, but like in actual practice, like we've not had a striker who can do that. Maybe Hosen could have had he ever been healthy, but I mean we didn't really get a chance to see that.
Yeah, and I'm sure part of it too is the playing style. Like we will literally like rather like give the ball away than play lump it to the big fucker a ton, but I guess it's not even really what we were doing here because he's a winger coming inside, not a striker. So
yeah. There was definitely a considered effort to get him a little more central whenever we were playing long out of the back, as it happened again a few minutes after that. And it just kind of goes to show that, like, you know, after the Open Cup match when we were talking about Fodry, like he was the one guy on Austin FC 2 who physically can just play in MLS. You can just throw him in there and he's fine.
Yeah.
And yes. Did you see the post game picture, by the way? That dude is ripped.
Yeah.
Guy's a beast.
He was definitely hitting the gym and hopefully not the roids over the offseason.
No. I mean, this don't help you a ton with getting in like soccer fitness.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. I don't know.
Well, true.
None of us are doctors.
Yeah. The traditional view of none.
Let's not speculate on our own players using steroids and instead just be convinced that like Michael Boxall does because that's why he's so angry.
Yeah, I like that we finally win a road game and all of us are just like, well, somebody was probably doing illicit substances and we sort of maybe cheated by like juicing our players. I don't know. It's the only rational explanation. Just not even half an hour in and we're already doing this. Okay. But yeah, it was nice to see him get on. Nice to see him play. I'm going to put another brick in my wall of the coaching staff clearly watches a lot of Arsenal because this is what they do with Kai Havertz a lot now. Even if he's playing midfield striker on the wing, whatever, like whenever that ball gets launched forward, he's the one who goes up and wins it. And that's pretty much what they did with CJ. Like you don't have to go up and like flick it on, but like knock it down, get it to one of, you know, near one of our guys. Don't just give it back type of thing. And yeah, I would, you know, especially on the road, if we're going to try to play that counter attack style, I would love to see some Route 1, like just fuck you old style Brexit ball. Give me a big guy and a fast guy and lump it forward.
Yeah, I think the other interesting thing about the CJ sub last night and the Rigoni sub at the same time, did you notice that they allowed CJ to play his normal natural position on the left side?
Yep.
Because that was indicative of me of, I don't know if it's, they just don't think CJ's comfortable on the right and they know Rigoni can play on the right as well, or has CJ overtaken Rigoni on the left side in training? That was a really, it raised a couple of flags for me just how this team is thinking right now.
I don't know. I wouldn't read too much into that. Like Rigoni's nominally two-footed, sure. And you're throwing CJ in for like what are really kind of his first big minutes. You know, it's on the road in a rivalry game. Granted, there are like four fucking Houston fans there, but you still don't want to like psychologically shock a player or something. But yeah, you never know. I mean, maybe he did. And then maybe Riggles won it back with a goal. So.
Which, by the way, was his best goal in an Austin uniform.
I don't know. He's had some good ones when they actually go in.
I feel like that last night, having to settle the ball down, hit it on the run, go far post. Like that was a tough goal.
If you've watched Aston Villa this year, that's what Ollie Watkins does. Run, touch, touch, bang, bottom corner off the post and in. Except he like does it on purpose and a lot, but like it very much looks like, well, I'm trying to give him a compliment. Like it very much looked like a professional forward, like kind of pacey striker, winger, forward, whatever you want to call him, goal.
Yeah, like it's an indicative goal of why everybody buys into the idea that like Rigoni is going to be this like great attacker because he does have like this level of skill and this level of competency. It just, he doesn't show it consistently enough to be worth a price tag. But you can clip together a highlight reel of Rigoni and be like, oh, that guy's really fucking good.
Yeah, if all you do is watch his YouTube reel, he's great.
Yeah, and you can overlay it with his band music.
There you go. Now all you got to do is get a... Was Maxi back in town this week?
He was.
Okay, so that might have been part of it too. Maybe he was giving Rigoni some Asadero lessons as well.
Yeah, I mean, Maxi went to a team that did not go very far in the Copa de la Liga in Argentina, so they're already in their first offseason in their bizarre format. I don't know how much you guys know about the Argentine season format, but it makes MLS seem very straightforward.
But do they do anything beyond just like Apertura, Clausura?
Yeah, they have one tournament that they alternate years between spring and fall that is 14 games, and the other one is 28 games.
Oh, okay. That's just silly.
Yes. So it's not even like consistent of which. So right now that they are finishing their back-to-back 14-game season playoff before later this summer, the 28-game season that runs for the rest of the year starts.
Sure. Why not? You wonder why people are leaving there for MLS. They got to keep up with their own schedule.
Yes.
This is like the scene in No, it's like the scene in basketball where they're like explaining the playoff permutations for 2 minutes.
The opening scene of that where they talk about all the teams moving is an absolute classic too. Since we were talking about the Yotes and moving to Utah earlier.
Oh, I did miss my chance to go in here that I would like to congratulate Utah on their first NHL victory yesterday, where they beat a lapless Chicago team 4-0.
Nice.
Yeah, I was not at Soldier Field last night, but 4-0. Ooh. Yeah. You know what? At least in Austin FC history, we have never lost a match 4-0 at home.
No, we got pasted by Dallas that one time, but
I mean, that was 5-3. At least we scored.
True. All righty. So it was a great goal. Did you guys get nervous we were going to screw it up?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, 100%. Were there actually moments where you thought Houston was going to put the ball in the net? Because I thought we actually saw it out relatively comfortable. But yeah, I was definitely terrified, especially because the announcers kept like trying to will it to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Houston always scores in these scenarios.
They really wanted Herrera to score a goal last night. They were openly rooting for that.
It felt like every time he completed a pass, we would get another detail on. He is now 15 for 18. He's like, okay, like who else are we doing this where we aren't counting Driussi's passes here. We aren't counting anyone else's passes, but he's Ace Ace. And like, don't get me wrong, he was great last year. He had a MVP quality season last year, but we'll see what he produces this year. But if I were a Houston fan, that would be the only bright spot I'd be looking at in this match, that he looked like a solid player for the 35 minutes he was on the pitch.
Yeah, there was a point where they showed like his pass map, and I think he had made like 12 passes at that point or something. It was just like, why bother? Okay, whatever. And they're like, this is what a great central midfielder box-to-box pass map looks like. And I was just like, okay. But he's made 12 passes.
Don Garber told them that's what they had to highlight.
Yeah, I'm sure Apple's perfectly happy to push whatever, like, star player. But yeah, he was good. I don't really, you know, maybe I'm just misremembering, but I don't think they had like a great whack at goal and we had to like clear it off the line or Stuver had to make a great save or anything. We actually like kind of defended it out pretty well.
No, there was nothing that was clinch worthy in there. I was just pretty convinced that we would somehow find a way to give up a goal.
Just like stupid penalty or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Two guys run into each other and fall over on a set piece. One of those classes.
We can't have nice way things kind of way, right? So
yeah. Like that moment where the goal goes in, you start laughing because it's Rigoni, and then you start to have the little like, oh shit, moment at the bottom of your stomach.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, suffering from joy, if you will.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. We got that done. You guys wanna do like, I guess we should talk about the referee a little bit. Because we do that all the time. Mostly fine with this guy. Didn't love. There was a point where I think it was Karaskia rips down Driussi and like leg whips him at the same time in a great way to like tear somebody's knee apart. Doesn't get a yellow for it. And then like 2 seconds later comes back and like rips him down again and like karate chops him in the neck. And the ref's fine, like, nah, all right, yellow. But other than that, I thought he was mostly good. Maybe kept his cards in his pocket. More than he should have, but I don't know if that hurt us too much. Any thoughts from any of you?
Houston Twitter was mad about him. Let's put it that way. Okay. Looking through some of their stuff, they thought he put the card out too much. I thought he was fine. Houston played pretty rough last night. If we're trying to be somewhat objective about how we watched that game, there was a lot of jersey pulling, a lot of pulling guys down. I don't want to say dirty necessarily, but it wasn't the cleanest of games on their side. And I didn't see a single yellow that was undeserved that they got.
Yeah. Let's say on the edge.
Yeah.
And there were definitely moments that got towards dirty.
Yeah. But,
you know, I don't think there's like, there have been games where you go out and you're like, all these guys are trying to do is hurt people. It wasn't anything quite that bad. Yeah. But, especially compared to the lovely time we had with Ted Uncle the week before.
Did anybody think this match moved a lot better and quicker with the new injury and stoppage time rules?
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely moved better. I didn't put that together, though.
Yeah, no, I was definitely like seeing how fast that, that Danny came off the field there, especially like near the end. It's like, oh, yes, we can get everyone off the field in 10 seconds. This is possible. And I feel like this will be, it was not as much of a talking point for today's match, but I guarantee you in the next 5 matches, we will have someone who forgets that this new rule is in place and goes from there. The thing we did not see last night in this match, but was, and I didn't get to watch too much other MLS matches yesterday, but through Slack and other places, heard that was a thing, is now the new in-stadium VAR announcements. And it sounds like that will be an interesting thing when we have to deal with the first one of those.
Yeah, I think it happened in the Vancouver-Seattle match. Yeah. I saw the replay on that on the wrap-up show last night. It was interesting to see. I mean, it was nice. It was very clearly explained by the ref. And if they continue that, that'll be it'll be a nice change to me, because I actually like getting the explanation in the stadium instead of having to guess. And by the way, the first person in this league that's going to completely screw up the get up at in time is Luis Suarez.
Yep.
Yes.
Without a question.
Yeah. We did also have that trial run. Like, was it 15 seconds into the game where I think it was Arthur goes down, like holding his face or something, even though nothing really happened on the play. And then the ref's talking to him and he tries to get him off the field. And so it was kind of nice to get that out of the way. Just like everybody's still a little amped up about the game even starting. And then immediately we're like, okay, well now we all know how this is going to work. And everybody remembers. It won't shock me if like that doesn't happen in a match until like the 30th minute and the ref just forgets about it a couple weeks down the line. But yeah, it definitely flowed better. Brad, on the VAR announcements, do they actually like give details, or is it just like no penalty?
No, the guy, it was a red card. So there was like after review, the ruling is that there was excessive use of force, whatever the actual ruling was, right? And thus a red card penalty.
Okay.
Red card issued. It wasn't a penalty, but red card issued.
Okay. No, that's interesting.
So they actually give you the reasoning behind the red card.
Do they like come out to the center circle, or is it like standing by the little TV monitor still?
They come out, but it's not necessarily about the center circle. I think it's just where it's convenient to where the play next play is going to close to start.
Okay, so kind of NFL-y.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's not bad. Yeah, I always think that's good, and like I'm glad they. I think it was FIFA was the one blocking it, where we can now actually see extra time in the stadium and. Just kind of common sense things as the game gets more and more of like a TV spectacle that you're not missing when you're in the stadium, I think is nice. Yeah, I don't have a ton of other like huge notes on the game. Anything else you guys want to touch on or think maybe we missed or discuss a little more in depth?
Not particularly. I mean, I felt the game was kind of straightforward. Honestly, there's not a whole lot to talk about in the game. It was a really defensive battle between the two lowest XG teams in the league, which we all kind of expected to go in. I think everyone was stunned that we came out with the goal the way we did, with especially with Rigoni being the one to score, right? But other than that, it kind of played out the way most of us thought the game was going to play out last night.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Stuber was great, as always. Like, his positioning was really good, and he did a good job of controlling rebounds, which he's not always great at. I mean, Philbomb has the XG last night is 1.67 for Houston and 0.76 for Austin. So, I mean, there were some decent chances, but...
I felt like Houston had a lot of those, like, 0.08 XG chances. Like, you know, you're maybe getting quite a few shots, but not... There is nothing other than, like, you know, we kind of covered the blocks and the couple big Stuber saves, but there was nothing that I was just like, oh my God, how do you miss it? Or we're really lucky there or anything like that.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So let's level set. We got 2 Copa Tejas wins. There's a new Copa Tejas formula this year that's weird and complicated, and I don't know if we need to get into this moment, but it's essentially a points per game model. Since the league hates us and make sure we all play different amounts of games. We got a lead, obviously. 2 games played, 2 games won. It's as good as you can do. I think we're at a point where if we get 7 more points out of Copa Tejas games.
I think it, by points per game, if we win the next 2 games, it's over.
Nice. And we have 2 more against each, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So we'll play, they play each other. The other 2 play each other next week. So Dallas and Houston play in Frisco next week. If that goes out to a draw, it really opens up the opportunity for us to, if we win the 2 after that, to clinch everything pretty quickly.
Nice. Is there a good way for us to clinch Copa Tejas while playing in Frisco again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it would require, it would require us losing or drawing the first game in Frisco, probably beating Houston. Yeah, there's a few, like, I have to run through everything, but yes, there is a possibility.
Okay. But we could have this wrapped up in a month or 2, like before we even get to the late season ones, in theory.
Yes.
So there is a possibility, according to our friend Moises, that this could be wrapped up at home on 5/15 against Houston before you even go to Frisco.
And that would require them to draw once or twice?
If they draw next week, okay, and then we win 2 in a row, the 2 main matches after that draw, then, yeah, Copa Tejas would be ours. It says 5/15. I think 5/18 on the road is what he means, because there's only 2 the 2 main matches for us to win would be 5/18 at home, or 5/15 at home, and then 5/18 on the road.
And right. The 5/18 is in Frisco, right?
Oh no, 5/11's in Frisco. 5/15 is Houston. So yeah, okay. we would actually win it at home against Houston,
and actually be able to celebrate it.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Let's look forward to it. Yeah, I don't know. I guess if somebody has to win that game, we want it to be Frisco because they're worse.
Yeah.
But obviously, rooting for a draw.
I mean, obviously, rooting for a draw. And I'm going to go the other way. If somebody is going to win that game, I kind of want it to be Houston, because that keeps Frisco in contention for the spoon, and that's just funny.
Okay, yeah, that's a good reason too.
Yeah,
thinking about multiple competitions here.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like a month or 2 ago we talked about which conference the wooden spoon was going to come out of, and I'm feeling really good it's going to be a West team still.
Yeah, I was looking at the standings, and the our 2 prior victories, those clubs are not looking great, and everybody's waiting for Seattle, and they're not launching yet. So we'll see. You mentioned the spoon, and we've kind of been joking about Austin FC as a contender. We're in a real playoff position right now as of this recording. We're in 7th in the West.
Yeah, and as of the recording, we are 3 points out of first place. Or 4 points out of first. Sorry, Vancouver got the win last night. That's going to change.
Yeah.
Because the Galaxy are going to absolutely crush San Jose tonight.
Yeah, it's a California Clasico. Weird stuff happens.
Rivalry game.
They went and smashed them 3-1 in San Jose just a few weeks ago. Until San Jose proves otherwise, I'm going to guess that Galaxy beats the absolute shit out of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll be 6 points at first, but we're in a logjam there for the next couple of spots.
Yeah, Charles, yeah, I mean, did you have
the joy of MLS is that had Austin, you can take away 2 goals, either for or against Austin, and turn them either into the tie for the conference lead or an 11th. So if you take away the equalizers by Philadelphia and San Jose and St. Louis, they'd be on 16 points. And if you take away the goal against, or if you take away the goal last night and the late goal by Jerusi against the Earthquakes last night, or a couple weeks ago, they'd be in 10th. Or I'm sorry, maybe in 11th. And so it just goes to show, like, the West is just kind of a logjam besides the Seattle and Dallas and San Jose, who are all just bad.
No, but I mean, we're not in a bad spot. Just kind of hang around while we wait for injuries to clear up and maybe bring some guys in. I know we talked about kind of the limits of games being played due to the schedule after the transfer window in the summer, but you know, just hang around and eventually get into the playoffs is kind of the recipe here, isn't it?
I mean, we've already exceeded my expectations in these first 10 games, and we haven't even played the 10th game yet.
I thought we'd be lucky to find a point per game. And we're going to get out of here with the minimum 12, depending on what happens next week. So I'm a little stunned, to be honest with you, that we're at the position we are. And yeah, I think there's a real conversation of this that needs to happen. If this team is probably going to be in the playoff conversation all year long, especially if we can make a few moves in the summer. We know Dessler's coming, which should help us on the back line even more than we already have right now. And I think there's an argument to be made that Gallagher he's not playing that great lately. So we'll get an upgrade there for sure, especially having a natural right back over there. If we can find a little help in the attack, like, this is a mid-table team right now in the West, I believe.
And honestly, yeah, I love the idea of Gallagher moving from an everyday starter to being super sub that can play six positions.
Yeah.
Yes, and super sub with speed.
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him play any number of four positions, depending on availability. It's going to be very strange for Wolf to have actual options in defense of like and having to like pick a defense every week. Like, that's going to be very strange.
Yeah, I think we could very easily kind of do a horses for courses thing, you know, home, road, Julio, Hedges, Leo, Heinz Eich. Those are all kind of, you know, not necessarily guys who do very different things, but kind of different top skills on a few of them. And mix and match and see what works. And, you know, we said Josh, you know, usually gets kind of the out of the gates game plan, at least like partially right. Could be a good way to make sure we're not getting, you know, blown off the pitch in the first half.
So. I mean, there's also the opportunity to go with like three center backs and kind of unleash Biro and Gallagher on the wings, which I would like to see at some point.
Yeah, I still think that's the long term, or should be considered part of the long term plan or options, just based on personnel. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that, you know, helps Biro, helps Gallagher. You know, I don't know Dessler a ton, but he seems like he's kind of fitting in that mold, at least from the little bit I've seen. Helps Hector, you know, he's probably not going to play a ton of minutes, but if you need to plug a guy in, he's definitely more of that, you know, 3-5 at the back kind of wing back than the please have actual defensive responsibilities kind of guy.
Yeah, and so, also just like giving Beer somebody to link up with. He kept trying to kind of play one-twos last night, and whoever he passed it to kept losing the ball while he was making runs past them. So it'd just be nice to see like an actual overlapping left back.
Yeah. It's weird how many more possibilities we have after last night now. I guess we'll go ahead and do the conversation. Does anybody still want Josh Wolf as the coach now after seeing that result or our results for the past month?
No.
I mean, if we look at it, okay, yes, we've got 9 points from the last four matches. That is a fact. Should Josh Wolf be fired immediately? No. Is Josh Wolf the long-term coach of this team in my mind? No. Like, at this point, like, I honestly, like, my ideal world is that we play well enough that he keeps his job, not because I love Josh Wolf or anything, but because I don't want to see Austin FC be terrible. But at the same time, like, if we can finish top seven in the West this year, he's going to finish out his contract.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm still Wolf out. I don't think that like the last four matches negate the previous year and a half. But also, like, and Brad kind of touched on this, is we saw things last night that Josh was forced to do that worked, which is he wasn't allowed to play Julio. The defense looked better. The team played better. He wasn't allowed to play Owen. He had to play CJ. CJ gets the assist. You know, and then he kind of sat back in a way that wasn't the way that Austin had been sitting back, which was much more passive. They played much more aggressively. They put a lot more pressure on Houston. Those are all things that we've been wanting. Like, if the team plays better because Josh Wolf is finally like recognizing all the things that we're recognizing, then great. That'd be awesome. Coaches can improve as people, just like players can improve. I just think this is a blip in a longer term pattern.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Brett.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm right there with you. I think that's the exact point. Is it's I don't think Wolf is the long-term guy here. Seth's right. You can't make a move now, right now, because we objectively have 1, 3, or 4. But if you're forced into playing the guys that the fans have been calling to play for quite a while now, and some of the moves that we made, it takes either injuries or red cards to see, like, hey, our yellow card accumulation, to go, hey, this actually works. You know, that's a problem to me, because I don't necessarily – I think next week Josh reverts back to to the lineups that we've been seeing. And I think that
I don't think Owen's going to be healthy for next week, from my understanding. I believe he's going to be out a little while.
Fair. My bigger concern is Cascante playing next week, yeah, to be honest with you. Especially against the attack that we're going to face against Galaxy.
You don't want to watch him chase down Galaxy's attackers?
But you have to take the 3 wins in a vacuum, I think, and look at them. Because it's easy to say, well, they've won 3 of 4. But 2 of the wins were at home against the absolute 2 worst teams in the league. And you needed a comeback in both of those to win. And the San Jose game, you needed a 100-minute goal to get the victory. Otherwise, you're walking out of there with just 1 point. Last night, honestly, I got no complaints about last night. I thought when we were going to potentially walk out of there with a 0-0 draw, I was going, all right, well, that's solid. But am I supposed to forget about what I saw in Kansas City just last week? Or, I mean, St. Louis just last week? No, I can't let that out of my mind. That was a shit performance. Am I supposed to forget everything that happened in March and early Feb? No, I can't do that, because the totality of the season still is just like, okay, it's fine. Points are nice for now. But, and I mentioned this last night somewhere else, but start showing me what we can do against better teams. Last night was a step in that direction. But what are we going to do at home against a Galaxy? How are we going to perform on the road at Vancouver, a place we've never played well in? Vancouver has been very good this year. Those are the things I need to start seeing. Can we, if we can pull out 4 points, let's say, in the next 2 weeks, you have my attention. Because the schedule gets pretty easy after that by MLS standards. Like, there's a ton of winnable games in May.
Yeah, and any points we can kind of scrap now and, you know, clean up and turn draws into wins or losses into draws later, great. I just wanted to bifurcate this and get everybody's kind of on the record opinion. I'm pretty much directly in line with Charles on this. I don't think he's learned anything, and him just doing things that the fans have been screaming for forever, out of necessity or not, doesn't necessarily, you know, fill me with the most confidence. You know, if he keeps doing stuff like that, he shows like some chance of learning or something, or, you know, we're actually improving and we're not just playing this like robot horseshoe of sadness bullshit. Awesome. You know, we don't think Josh Wolf is a good coach, and that's why we want him gone. We're not part of this, like, you know, I don't like Josh as a person, therefore he should be fired, which is a small subset, but a subset nonetheless of the Wolf out crowd. And I just kind of wanted to clear the air with how heated these conversations tend to get, that we're very much in the, no, this is more of a, we don't believe you're good at your job thing. Not like a, I don't like you because you're a dick in press conferences thing.
Yeah. I don't need you to be my best friend. I need you to win games.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and even looking at the stats from last night, like, that's a very un-Wolf-like performance from the team in terms of just like the structure and how they played. Like, you know, we lost possession 67-33. We, you know, lost expected goals by a goal. We got outshot on target in total shots. You know, they made 545 passes. We made 230. Like, it just was a complete opposite of everything Wolf's always said about how he wants to play. And if he's gonna, you know, learn and grow and be like, hey, you know what, maybe this team isn't good enough to play the possession style that I want to play, and instead we can play like this and win, that would be a huge improvement.
Yeah, that'd be totally fine. And I think part of the reason we're all doubtful of that is that it's year four.
Yeah,
but to me, this feels like the wins against Frisco and Houston last year, that one Covatejas that I think saved his job.
I mean, but I'll push back a little bit. I mean, those wins were against depleted squads. Last night, I mean, yes, the Dynamo have a few injuries, but, like, that was a, like, we beat a legit Dynamo team last night. Like, let's give him credit for that. He's trying to do something different. Do I think he can get to the level that all of us want him to be at? No. But I think that he is at least he's feeling pressure, and feeling pressure is leading to him being forced to be more flexible and creative, and that's a good thing. And some of that is by force of player availability. Some of that is by public demand. Some of that is – it's a combination of factors. But, like, he's in a state of nervous fear, and that's a good thing based on these results.
So you like a wolf that is nervous and fearful?
Yeah, sure.
That's not great for your survival possibilities. But, hey, and, yeah, I was with Brad, too. Even if we had scraped that out 0-0 the way we played, I would have been like, all right, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's partially my expectations are so low when we're on the road right now, right? That it's just, oh, shit, okay, well, that's fine. We got a result, cool. So I'm curious to get your perspective on this, Seth, because you're a little more tuned into some things than we are, for sure, on some grounds. Where do you think that pressure is really coming from? Is there actual pressure internally now?
I mean, I get to the point here where they have been I mean, internal ticket sales have been looking fine this year, but I know that there's been a ton of nervousness on their end on Leagues Cup stuff, just around some safety security issues. There's also getting to a point here of Roto has made it pretty clear between the lines that, like, he's expected to make the playoffs this year. So, like, I feel like that is the real thing that is driving Josh at this point, is like, he knows he needs to make the playoffs. We have 12 points after 9 matches right now. If we continue on a 1.33 points per match, that is might be enough to make the play-in game, but probably not. We've probably had a slightly easier schedule than average through these 9 games, which is maybe not what we expected when we started the season. I don't think any of us thought Seattle would be this bad or Orlando would be this bad. So it's been an interesting world of, like, we still need to pick up the pace a little more from where we're at to be able to make the playoffs. And I don't know if 8th or 9th is enough to save his job. I think if you win an 8-9 playing game, it's probably enough. But, like, Roto's made it fairly clear that if we don't make the playoffs, he's gone.
Okay, well, I mean, we'll take that, because I think we were all resigned to, like, what the fuck ever, Josh is finishing his contract.
I mean, I think he has to make the playoffs this year.
Okay.
That is me reading between the lines. I don't have an email from Roto being like, here is his contract line of this. Like, no, I don't have that. But missing the playoffs 2 years in a row would be unacceptable to him, especially in a league where, 9 of 14 teams in the West make the playoffs.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll be pretty clear. I don't think even if you win the 8-9 game, it counts as making the playoffs, except if you win, like, the first round, I guess, you know, at that point. Yeah, it counts as making the playoffs to me, but...
Yeah, but I think just getting top 9 is enough for the front office at this point, is my understanding.
Sure. And by the way, if Roto did send you an email that said that, like, he should be fired.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this before, right? I think Josh would actually get a little more leeway from this fan base if he was just a little more forthcoming with his thoughts. You know what I mean? Like, he's so robotic in the press conferences, and so dismissive of legitimate questions that it turns people off, and it turns people against him. And it's a character flaw that he has, for sure. But again, I don't need to like the coach. I just need him to win.
Have any of you guys worked in low-level sales before?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a technique that's pretty common that's called, I don't know if there's, like, a different technical name for it, but it's called a feel, felt, found. Mm-hmm. And so basically what you do is somebody, like, fan comes in and says, I'm upset that you keep playing your son in, you know, 5 different positions instead of this other guy that I like more. Doesn't matter whether the fan's right or not. And so, you know, the way you sort of, like, get people on your side is you go, well, you know, I understand how you feel. XYZ person that I just made up felt the same way when they were in this position. And what they found is that by, you know, thinking, if you look at, you know, name shit that Owen's better at than the other player, you'll see things a little more closely from our perspective. And they've always ended up, you know, happier, da 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 da. And Josh does the complete fucking opposite of that over and over and over, where he's just like, no, you're idiots. Like, shut up and like what you get. And it just sort of like somebody has to teach him soft skills at some point. And it's like we said a million times, if you're winning, you know, 95 games in a row, nobody gives a shit. It's sort of like endearing and funny, but yeah, if you're like on the rocks, like help yourself a little bit.
Yes.
He's the epitome of Nuke LaLoosh when he's just learning from Crash Davis. Your shower shoes have fungus on them, Josh. When you're winning 20 games in the show, you're allowed to because you're creative.
Yes.
Yeah. See, I think part of the problem is that he learned how to do press and media as a coach for Berhalter, because he does do the same things he does. And so I'm hoping that just like having a better role model, if we're going to extend the analogy of Roto being his Crash Davis, maybe he will get better.
Mm. I guess that does sort of work, because Roto was mostly working on youth and reserve teams. So he is sort of, you know, stuck in the minors for a while.
If you're going to try to be a mini Berhalter, at least bring the back passes.
Yeah, like some sick dimes, some sick bounce passes.
Seriously.
Or like there are Josh people Lee who like Berhalter because he has a stupid Nike collection. Like, something. Like,
yeah, Josh doesn't have that level of fashion sense. Like, he just wears like whatever, like black polo or black button down that like grabs first.
You mean you don't have the Josh Wolf all black collection from Adidas that you could buy from Fanatics? It would be $119 for every item, but you'd get free shipping on it.
You know what, though? I respect him staying in the lane and knowing what works. Because you can get a little too crazy with some fashion and then just get made fun of, man. He stays in the lane. He knows that it's going to work. And you can't really say anything about it because it's like, all right, well, he looks good. He looks put together.
Yeah, he can do
it. So just to point this out, in the first season, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He wore 6 different colors of shirts during the first season. In no other season has he worn more than 4. Like, and he keeps limiting it down. This season so far, he only has 2. He's only worn black or white.
This is why we
I appreciate. Yeah, I appreciate the hard hitting journalism of the false 9 there, and I'd also like to thank. I believe it was you who wrote the article there, predicting a loss. And I think right now, with the trajectory of the chickens and cyber trucks and everything else involved in that, we would encourage the esteemed staff at the False 9 to continue predicting losses for this team. Because
I believe the chickens are actually predicting losses, is my understanding. Charles, can you confirm? It's not actually being
so.
You're just channeling messages from chickens, correct?
Yeah.
Correct. So here's the thing. I've been trying to handle the chickens this year. The normal chicken handler is off. And so I just don't feel like I'm interpreting their messages correctly. And so maybe like I should have just like taken some time to like really calibrate that before like really putting out the predictions. I don't think their chickens are wrong ever. I think they're always correct. I think it's the fallibility of man and trying to interpret them like any religion that really is the problem here.
So what you're saying is you set up your team of chickens perfectly and they're just not executing?
The chickens have it set up perfectly. It's us who are failing by not being able to understand what they're trying to convey to us.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I got that backwards. All right. Well, that'll be a good good promo line, lifting the curtain and telling us how the chickens work. I did at the beginning of this kind of little segment start thinking about what would happen if Josh started dressing like Vincent Kompany, which, if you guys don't see his sideline ensemble for Burnley, he wears a full suit, blank, like absolute shocking white sneakers and a baseball cap, and he's bald. And so he comes out with this sort of like weird combo, like tech bro, poor NBA guy thing that's going out. And so I just want to see Josh have a little like personality on it. And then he'll do it once and we'll be like, no, for the love of God, never do that again. But just something along those lines where he's showing us a little flavor.
You know what?
I think Josh's hair is too good to be hidden underneath the baseball cap.
Yeah, that's true. He does have nice hair. And while we're saying nice things about Josh, since we didn't get to talk about it last week, the highlight of the St. Louis City game was a fantastic touch he had on the sideline.
Yes.
To kill a ball.
He definitely, from all eight of us who were up there, definitely got a nice golf clap, because that's probably what he prefers over loud cheering.
Yes. He seems like he would fit in my conception of Midwestern fans.
Well, I mean, he's also a huge, I mean, he might actually prefer golf to this game sometimes.
I don't know. We could ask him at some point. If we ever get those sweet press credentials we've definitely applied for. yeah, so you guys, anything else you want to cover? Should we move into the fun formatty stuff? Format stuff. Okay. Stock Rising. Brad, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think it's a guy we set up previously, but I think Brendan Hines-Ike has been really, really good. He's just been a rock back there for us since and earning this starting position that he's seemingly gained over the last 3 or 4 weeks, right? He's always in the right position. I just like the way he plays. He seems to make really good decisions with the ball. He's really good with the ball at his feet as well. And then the double win as well, I think, also stock up are my new game day shoes that arrived yesterday prior to the match. Threw my old ones out, and hey, they're 1-0.
Tell us more.
I don't know. They're $45 green Verde and black shoes I found on Puma.com on clearance.
Okay. Holy shit. I didn't realize Hines-Ike is 29.
Yeah, he's not our typical 30-plus-year-old center back, right? I think there's an interesting conversation with Hines-Ike when Vaisanen comes back. I want to see those two together, because I think that might actually be our best center back pairing.
Well, you might get a whole month of that during Copa America.
I don't know that I want to wait that long.
Yeah, well, I also don't know how fast. I mean, we start to have some midweek matches coming up mid-May, which mid-May ain't that far away at this point.
No. No, for some reason, I thought he was like 24. And just a prospecty guy that we picked up.
No, Hines-Ike has been around the league a while, but he's 29.
Yeah. Okay. Seth, do you want to give us your stock rising?
I'll give it to our rip boy, CJ Fodry. I mean, obviously, nice assist. We complimented on him on his play earlier in the pod here. But it is really nice to see him playing in a non-Leagues Cup match. He is a first-team player. He looks like his days of playing for FC Do, and we have not mentioned FC Do did lose in penalties last night to the town, who is San Jose 2 rebranded, but they're moving to Moraga, but played at PayPal Park last night. I don't know. MLS Next Pro can make your head hurt. But CJ really shouldn't be playing any more games down there. I mean, it'd be one thing if they were still in the Open Cup, but at this point, CJ is a solid first-team player. And yeah, I don't expect him to be a starter at this point, but would love to see him in a 20, 30-minute bench role on a regular, frequent basis, and especially as we start getting into midweek matches and other things with rotations. Like, he should be fighting for a starting position, and he can make a difference at this level. And it's great to see someone jump from a third-tier level to a first-tier level like he has.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about it a little bit, too. It's not just, hey, is he good enough talent-wise, but even if he's sitting on the bench for a couple weeks, like just the repetition, the getting to know how your schedule works, how all of that works in like a professional first-team environment is valuable. And like, you know, we don't want him stuck on the bench the whole season, but if he doesn't play for a week or two, it's not the end of the world either.
Yeah, I mean, he's 20 years old. Like, we are, yes, Owen is younger than him, but it's like, this guy is 20 years old and was in college, 18 months ago. Like, it is like, he's still adulting, even though I'm pretty sure we saw a post of him a few months ago buying a place. And if you're 19, 20 years old and buying a place, well, good for you.
Yeah. I don't know what I was doing when I was 19, 20 years old, but the idea of purchasing property was not anywhere close to my fucking mind.
My mind was in a very altered state at 19 and 20 years old.
I was going to say, I think that was very much the good old days of, I have X amount of money in my bank account until my next paycheck hits. That's how much money I have to spend. When life is simpler. Charles, do you have a stock rising you want to hit?
I was going to say stock rising Danny Pereira playing defense. I thought that he did a much better job of covering back than we normally see. And I think part of that was he was not forced to try to cover for center backs being out of position and was just kind of able to you know, have the ball in front of him, see the game, and that really helped him to be able to solidify the defense.
Yeah, and it's a little less dribbling, but I feel like he gets more space when he actually manages to recover the ball and dribble out. Because there are a few where he just ran 50, 60, 70 yards yesterday once he recovered the ball and nobody could touch him. So it's nice there too. I'm going to combo a little bit off of Seth's and I'm going to choose Philip, the oldest of the suffering from Joy Corgis. Because after the last FCTO match, CJ was very depressed and he was sad because he didn't play well. And I think he was still, you know, upset about not being on the first team yet. And we, oh my God, what a save. We made him pet Philip to cheer him up. And he smiled a little bit and started talking to us about his dog. And we didn't want to be creepy and be like, yes, we've met your dog several times. But after that, we were like, okay, you know what? You know, for sure, the next time you get on the field, we thought it would be for FCTO. You're going to get some sort of goal involvement. And that came true. So we've just decided that Philip is magic. And if somebody's in a slump, we're going to bring him around to the training center and make them pet him.
I mean, Philip is magic. So
this is. Yeah, he is. And he has a sweet battle jacket.
Yeah.
So stock rising Philip. I guess let's do stock fallings. If you need to reach back into the city game, go for it. But Seth, you want to lead off?
I'm going to choose one from this game. I'm going to choose our friends at El Batallón and the Dynamo team for having a TIFO that I looked like it was printed and didn't have a message on it. And somehow their fans fell even lower. And we didn't bring that many fans to Houston last night. And on the broadcast, you could hear our fans a good third and a half of the time. And that is really sad. Like, even though, like, the non-supporter section attendance last night was not terrible by Houston standards, but it was still like, what is going on there? And their stock can somehow fall further. So I will say that the Cheds on the Dynamo side stock falling.
Can I add something to that for you real quick?
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
So to my recollection, Houston has unveiled two TIFOs against Austin during all of our games down there. Those happen to be the only two times we've won in Houston.
Nice.
So, I mean, I assume that there will be no one should ever point this out, and we are apologizing for pointing this out. And we gratefully request future TIFOs at every match.
Yeah. I was going to ask if maybe it was such a terrible TIFO because our friends at Texas TIFO Solutions had an inside job, and maybe Houston ordered it from them, and they decided to sabotage it just because they love Austin FC that much.
Okay, was the TIFO front office based in about their new mascot? Because I couldn't tell what was supposed to be on the picture.
Yeah, I had no idea what that was.
I mean, also, their mascot is named Diesel. I mean, that makes the Chevron Community Corner seem like a model of corporate social responsibility.
At Shell Energy Stadium. Brad, how about you? Stock falling?
It's a guy who didn't even see the field last night, Julio Cascante. I think there's an argument to be made that Julio Cascante is currently the best, or the fourth best center back on this roster. You look at the goal last week against St. Louis. There was a combination of problems in that goal, but he was one of them. And then you look last night and the games that he hasn't played this year. I feel like we have just been a more compact and decisive. We've seen more compact and decisive play at the center back position when he's not on the field. He gives us stuff going forward and in the attack for sure. That maybe some of our other players don't at the center back position, specifically Hedges. I think Heinz-Eich's really good with the ball at his feet, like I mentioned earlier. Weissenden, we know, can play a little bit with his feet, although he makes some questionable passes. But from a defense-first standpoint, he's the weak link right now. And while I don't have a problem with him starting games, and I certainly don't have a problem with him, you know, in the midweek rotations and things, there's a real argument to where he needs to be on the bench more often than not right now.
Yeah, we need a late game striker sub.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put him up top. Charles, how about you? Stock falling?
My stock falling is announcers who aren't Adrian Healy calling Austin FC matches. Kevin Kerr last night, he tried to make an analogy about Austin playing disjointedly, like the separation of church and state, which I think anybody who lives in Texas will tell you doesn't exist. He used the term do-rag, which I don't think we use in 2024 anymore. He made a claim that Austin's bench was short because they're the quote walking wounded when there's only two players out. If you look at like the MLS injury report, there's a lot of teams have five or six guys out right now. And then of course the worst call of the night, which I think was by the play-by-play guy whose name escapes me, was there's a time when Zardes got the ball in space and he said that quote Zardes gets the ball with pace going forward. And I don't know if everybody realizes that you can't use Zardes and pace in the same sentence as a positive. That just not what exists in 2024.
Yeah, I'm not going to use it, but one of my potential moments of suffering was when Zardes got a yellow card because Driussi played a great lead pass to him and just couldn't catch up to it. And the defender tracked it and he had to haul him down. You know what? Let's do a little bit on Zardes here, just since he got brought up. I think, you know, he was trying, he was making smart plays, but the legs just aren't there. And I think we got to start looking at him and like Will Bruin is 10 minutes too much territory. Because, I mean, you know, it's not like he's doing his, you know, I just don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm just going to go be a chaos agent thing. Like, he's making smart plays. He just can't run.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, even to get the ball to the corner. He's just a great example of like Father Time's undefeated. And like once like that gets you, like there's no coming back.
Yeah, I just need to clip that up and make it a button that I can press for every time you want to say it. So my stock falling. I had a couple choices here. I'm gonna go with Ethan Finley because you know, he hasn't been playing much this year and he usually kind of runs around a bit off the bench and he's kind of fine. And I think his biggest contribution yesterday in a game we won, he's basically a ghost except for when he was standing right in the way of Alex Ring having a good opportunity at the end of the first half. I don't know if he's kind of getting the Father Time thing too, or if he's just lacking some confidence or we weren't getting the ball to him or anything like that, but he wasn't doing a ton on defense. Like, you know, normally he's very regimented and useful on tracking back, but wasn't doing anything going forward. Wasn't doing well with the ball when it did come to him. Wasn't doing a ton on defense. So I don't know if he's just sort of at the age curves are catching up to you time or what, but it's not looking great at the moment. Any thoughts from y'all on that?
No, I think it's been evident for most of the season that he's kind of getting to that point, right?
Yep.
It's nothing against him. It's just, you know, you get older, you get miles on the legs, and it happens.
Yep.
Same thing we're seeing with Jossie. So I think he's going to become a little more, if he wasn't already that kind of midweek starter for us most of the time. He was forced into action last night because Owen didn't play, right? But I don't think it's going to be too long before you see somebody like a Fodre take over the Finley spot because Fodre offers more pace. And I don't see that you're losing anything with Fodre on the field versus Finley on the field.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing too, is part of it's his position.
Yeah.
Like you can get by in certain parts of central midfield or as a center back without pace, especially like depending on your system, you can't really do that out on the wing.
Yeah.
And I mean, we talk about a little bit, that's a little bit of Owen's problem, but you know, if Owen's faster than you and, you know, a better crosser and a little quicker moving the ball, like why wouldn't you play him? So we'll see. Brad, you want to go ahead and do your moment of suffering?
I think it was realizing after the goal went in and we were going to go win at this game, that the endless wolf out, wolf in debate was just ramping right back up. It seemed to pretty much quiet down lately because pretty much everybody was looked to be going towards the same direction of, yeah, this is just done. And now the nuanced thinking that we've been trying to do about it today is just going to go by the wayside, and folks are, it's going to be spewing crap back and forth again.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're all tired of doing that, but it's going to keep cropping up. So we'll probably have some twists and turns and talk about it some more in the next few weeks, but I don't think our opinions are going to change a super ton. So I figured we'd go ahead and get out ahead of it today.
Oh, I'm not talking about us necessarily. I'm talking within the fan base.
Yeah, like, yeah, I know. But yeah, that way we can just kind of point to it and be like, look, we said this 4 weeks ago. Our opinions haven't changed.
Yeah.
At least that's my read on it. Yeah. But I'm going to go ahead and do mine. Mine is when Hector Herrera came on, because I hate people with very American sounding accents just saying Ache Ache wantonly and repeatedly, like every 30 fucking seconds. And it just annoys the shit out of me. It doesn't, you know, help that he's a pretty good player and plays for a rival. There was also this weird bit where he was the announcer was talking about Hector Herrera like he's Kevin De Bruyne and not like a guy whose entire career has been as like a complete hatchet man for a team full of hatchet men. Yeah, but Seth, you want to do yours? Because I suspect Charles's might have just changed.
Yeah, no. Well, I'm going to do mine is actually less related to the match. It's just like working. My biggest moment of suffering, honestly, was before the match, because doing our away stuff, like just planning Houston away is always a pain, because none of us were in Houston last night, but they're doing all sorts of construction around the stadium. There's all sorts of BS to deal with around that. So like, I'm actually proud to say that like last night was not actually like that much suffering on the field. There was way more suffering leading up to the match, which like, that's a good sign. I wish it was like that more of the time. I don't wish to have the BS of all the other stuff that we have to deal with, but I will say in a not-so-moment of suffering, an Austin business, Luster Pearl, has opened up within 3 blocks of the stadium, and it sounds like they did a great job hosting everyone tonight, and like we actually have a game plan for fans and hopefully a game plan to continuously win matches in the swamplands, in the energy-filled swamplands of Southeast Texas.
Nice. They just opened in Houston by the stadium.
Yeah
okay, if you watch, nice.
Sorry, I thought you were saying like next to Q2 at first.
And no, they've not opened. I mean, I will say like it's really interesting because I will not, as I think I've explained to all of you independently at points, I don't watch sporting events at the Luster Pearl East location in Austin because I've watched two of the worst, the like all time suffering from joy moments. I watched Cueva there, which was obvious. I don't need to explain anything more about that. And I also watched the 21-point Cincinnati Nevada meltdown in the 2017. It was the year the Final Four was in San Antonio meltdown, where that was horrendous as well. But yeah, I don't watch sporting events there, but I guess pre-gaming there is fine. The owners are nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's always good. And, you know, they already have a relationship with kind of the Austin FC fan base. So it's nice. I have delayed as much as possible. Charles, do you have a moment of suffering for us?
I mean, I'm just living it right now. Here's the thing: I don't live a charmed enough life. I mean, I don't live a charmed enough life for both my teams to win within like 15 hours, 16 hours of each other. So I was expecting bad things, but then you in our group chat messaging about being worried about penalties and about Hodge Wright, and both of those things look like they're going to be happening right now. You know, maybe you should be picking the games instead of the chickens. I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to test that.
Yeah, and for those of you who are listening to this on delay, we've been recording during the FA Cup semifinal. Manchester United was up 3-0 and recently gave up a penalty scored by American Haji Wright. And I was trying to dance around that getting taken and the call and when they reviewed it so Charles could catch his breath before we went through and finished this up here. But
I assume you just didn't want a 30 second rant of me cursing over and over again.
No, that would be great if you want to go for it. You know, we can start clipping it up and drop the stuff on YouTube, and you'll be the next Mark Goldbridge.
I was about to say, but you know what? He's still less angry than the owners of Nottingham Forest today, who I'm double checking if their tweet is still up, posted one of the most outrageous things I've ever seen an official club. It is still up. It has 16 million views of three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we can simply not accept. And like openly calling the VAR a Luton fan on your official team account is just, wow.
We have That's not a good way to actually face sanctions. It's a little more than just saying disgracia.
Like you have an appeal in front of the, what you call it, in front of the league authorities. Like if they want to deduct more points and actually send them down, they have a reason to do this.
Well, that's amazing because they shouldn't be in the Premier League in the first place because yes. The playoff final they won against Huddersfield was a complete fucking sham.
Yes, it was.
I will also say that all three of those decisions were Ashley Young related, and the world still owes him karma because a bird shit in his mouth on live international television, which he denies, but there's fucking video of it. And so maybe the universe is just kind of saying, you know what, buddy, maybe you need these. You've had a hard one lately. So maybe it's just helping him out. So we're all over the place today. Quick preview, Galaxy, we kind of touched on a little bit coming up. Early game, Saturday, it's the official kickoff, like 12:53 or something.
12:55 on Fox and Apple TV. We'll see. I was looking at the weather. Obviously, predicting weather 6 days out in Austin is never an easy thing. But they're projecting some thunderstorms that morning. Might be up in the 80s. Hopefully it is mildly uncomfortable for those folks in Carson that aren't used to this thing called humidity.
Yeah, I think the other thing to think about with that game is that's an 11 a.m. kickoff on the body clock for the Galaxy. Yeah. So that I'm curious to see how they play. When do they fly in? Are they going to fly in on Thursday? Do they come in Wednesday to try to give themselves a little more extra time to adjust on the body clock? I'm just curious about how they approach this week.
Or do they start practicing at like 8 a.m. at home?
Yeah.
Yeah, they could do the whole thing where people start inverting their meals whether they're going to fly like to Europe or something. This is a huge thing he explained to me, and I was just like, oh, that's really weird. I just eat food. Like when I'm hungry.
But they also
food at any meal. Like you're an adult, you can just do that.
Breakfast for dinner is great. Like what are you talking about?
But they also draw the late game tonight, right? So less
than the late game is a 5:15 local time kickoff.
Sure, but they didn't play yesterday, I think is what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that is a day less of recovery time to then turn around and play the earliest possible game on Saturday. It's an interesting timing for them to be coming in. But it might be the game I'm most excited to see as far as a road team coming in this year because I think they have the most fun high-flying attack in MLS, and I want to see that team play.
Yeah, and I'm sure there will be plenty of narratives. He's probably going to be on the bench, but Diego coming back, all of that fun stuff. We'll talk about it for sure, but I don't think there's anything crazy. Like, you know, we're talking about them being on one day shorter rest, but like, this isn't like these European teams who are playing you know, five games in 13 days or something.
I was going to say, it's not like a Klopp going on. We had to play in Rome on Wednesday night. And BT Sports scheduled us for a 12:30 kick on Saturday. Why are they doing this to us? Like, I don't like have sympathy for Greg. Greg Vanney will not do that.
I think Klopp has a point on that, but like he doesn't complain when it happens to other teams. So.
Of course not.
Like Arsenal is about to on Tuesday play four games in 10 days for the second time this month.
After you guys had 19 days off.
Yep. So it's and I mean part of that was an international break.
Yes.
Weird FA Cup scheduling and stuff. So like it happens, but like I don't think that you know the MLS way you get crunched. Like maybe if you're flying out for CCCC or something. I think I had one too many C's there, but. Like that, I sort of get, but like a day less on rest, I don't think it's going to matter. I do think the body clock thing might actually matter a little bit. But, you know, they could fly in Wednesday, they could fly in Thursday, they could just say, you know, screw it, come Friday, and then, you know, try to mess with a sleep schedule or something. But I mean, they're professional athletes, they have professional trainers. I'm sure they'll have a plan.
I mean, I feel the plan is just practice at that time every day this week. Like that just seems like the obvious one to me. I mean, sometimes schedule congestion is just a thing. Like I'd be much more worried when we start to get more midweek matches in May about rest than now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. You know, it's still 6 days. It's not like three or four or something. And you're still mostly in your rotations there.
I mean, and if you look at our midweek schedule, like the 15th, which is the first one that's midweek, is Houston at home. And then we play Sporting KC back at home. We have a little bit of a tough one. The next one is we have Portland at home Wednesday, and then we're in Utah to play RSL on Saturday. That's a little bit of a short turnaround. Let me look at what RSL has that week, because that would be – if they get two home matches in a row, that'd be a little hard. And, like, RSL's looking like – they might be a top three team in the West. They're looking good.
The most brutal one is later in the year. It's team plays at Toronto and then actually goes straight to LA for LAFC a few days later.
But there's an extra. It's like I think that's a Saturday to Wednesday rather than Wednesday to Saturday. So there's
My understanding is they're also going straight to Los Angeles from Toronto.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, I would think you would almost have to at that point, but. I mean, are we like, let's do a quick hitter predictions. I'm going to say like 3-1 Galaxy, like we're going to try, but they're a pretty good team. And I think what they do well is something we don't defend well. Charles, we'll get you in real quick here. Quick prediction.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same. Like I think Galaxy is a team that is both good and the way they score will give Austin problems even at home. That's the one match where I think it really could get out of hand scoring wise.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that, but hopefully we can kind of keep it together a little bit and not lose our heads. Seth, a quick prediction.
I'd say 2-0 Galaxy. I mean, I don't see where the goals come from against them. Even like their back line is not as strong as their attack, but that's implying that they won't just be attacking us all match. And we know how great Austin FC is at counterattacks.
Yeah. Well, we got our secret weapon of a long ball to CJ heading it on to Riggles now. So,
yeah.
Brad, how about you?
I think we're going to try to play this game kind of the way we played this past one against Houston. I don't think we're going to come out looking to possess and attack a whole lot at home like we usually do. We're going to sit back and absorb pressure, and Galaxy's just too good. This is probably going to be, I'm with you, I think 3-1, 3-2, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. And I think this might be like a Julio bangs one in on a set piece kind of goal, not like a, you know, we have a nice little free flowing thing and we end up with a nice shot, or Driussi does, you know, pulls out a miracle or something. I think it'll be kind of like a scrappy goal if we do score.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Galaxy play this year, and for those out there listening, they're just so much improved over last year with the additions they've made, and their attack is wildly, wildly fun to watch. If you're listening before the game tonight, turn on the game tonight against San Jose and watch the Clasico, because it's going to be fun as far as just watching a team fly up and down the field and score goals.
But only if you're not watching the NHL playoffs.
You can. There's two screens.
Yeah, that's true. YouTube TV has a NBA and NHL dual wield now, which is pretty awesome.
And tonight's game is on FS1 too, so like you don't even need to like have an Apple TV separate window.
Okay, there you go. Get the laptop out or do split screen. Or
I was going to say, as Brad's Avs go up to Winnipeg, so we'll see who's skating faster.
Yeah. All right. Well, now I think we've done that full circle, and that was kind of impressive by us. We did that totally on accident. Awesome. On behalf of Brad, Seth, and Charles, who's definitely still doing this, thanks for suffering with us. Bye.
Wallace here for Austin Jarrett Stroud. It's Diego, for goodness! He has written his name into Austin folklore.
They just won't go away.
Oh, he hits the upright again! That's impossible!
The Bears' season's going to end on a double doink.
Altidore squares it. Dempsey's missed it. Donovan has it. From hope, there is glory!